The following senior talk was given by Susan Takio Gilman at the Zen Center of New York City Fire Lotus Temple. Takio is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order and is currently serving as the assistant training coordinator.
Noble friends, on this Sunday morning, I'm Takio, and usually Hojin Sensei is here giving a Dharma talk. She's up at the monastery leading a session there, a week-long intensive. So I appreciate she asked me to come down and be with you all. So here I am. I started practice in Brooklyn. So it's always good to be back. So this talk is called Letting Go of Getting It Right, or Letting Go of Being Right, and Letting the Response Be Compassion. The Four Noble Truths of Buddhism, for most of you that's probably familiar, but if you're brand new to Buddhism, it might sound a little odd. The Four Noble Truths of Buddhism are the truth of suffering, the cause of suffering, the ending of suffering, and the path. So it's a kind of systematized way that the Buddha came up with to teach liberation. And for those of you who got beginning instruction today, I'm sure Chikyu mentioned that this is a practice of liberation from suffering that we experience and the creation of more suffering. Sounds good, right? So that first noble truth that all life suffers can also be understood through these three characteristics, or called marks of existence. All marks of existence include impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and the non-existence of an enduring self or no self. So I'll circle back to those. But how does it feel to encounter them? That life suffers. I certainly resisted that, extremely resistant to that, because I really came to practice feeling like I was drowning in my own heartache about the world, about mistakes I'd made, about, you know, all kinds of negative feelings. And so I said to my teacher, but it's not all suffering. You know, which is true. I really wanted it to balance out. I wanted the teachings to put it right out there, but the teachings are kind of bare bones in many ways. You know, all life suffers. This is true, but that is certainly not all that life is. But it's a truth. And so in studying the Dharma and like learning Dharma, we really have to kind of study what the Dharma says, you know, kind of intellectual study. It's essential as we develop our capacity to experience the true nature of reality. So it's conceptual understanding, it's thinking about things, it's talking about them, it's asking teachers. We have to have that. And just as importantly, we have to live it and experience for ourselves what that truth is, in order for it to be transformational. So that brings us to Zazen, foundational teachings in Zen, for sure, very central. It's meditation is part of all traditions of Buddhism. And it's very grounding. It's also the way that we clear our kind of habitual circular chattering minds so that we can experience the kind of deeper truth of our existence. And it, as Daito Roshi used to say, we learn to use our intellect in a whole different way. That is true. Yeah, so how do we work with applying the Dharma to real life situations? That's a big challenge, and it's I've found that it's really important to be willing to enter the confusion of my own mind, my own experience, in order to kind of dig deeper to enter that confusion about suffering and its causes without losing my sense of possibility and being able to respond appropriately. So for each of us, we have to kind of study that mind in Zazen. You know, where do we get lost? You know, in the sort of like cycles or bubbles of distractions or maybe self-criticism. And we learn how to study and practice this letting go without aggression toward ourselves or force. And that's hard. And I found these three marks of existence, impermanence and insufficiency and no self, to be really helpful in learning how to let go. And they're helpful in a sense because they really point to emptiness, which is also kind of this core teaching. We heard it in the Heart Sutra, that all dharmas, all phenomenon, all reality is actually empty of any permanent nature. It's impermanent, it's insufficient, it's lacking a permanent nature. We're lacking a permanent enduring self. You know, we're our sensations and our history and our bodies, and that's all gonna go, right? And it's constantly changing. So learning to kind of understand the concept of emptiness, you know, that all form this, you know, it's empty, but it's real. It's, you know, provisionally real at this moment. Although this is plastic, that will probably endure far too long. Its nature is empty. My nature's empty. Your nature's empty. So how do we live into that? Yeah, and I think it's kind of obvious why it's important. You know, because if we think that this body has a enduring essence, we're going to fight for its survival, which we should do, but not at anybody's expense and not to create suffering. So working that out. I found that the path is really so contingent on being able to express what I'm learning as I'm learning it. So giving this talk today, it's practice, believe me. So getting into kind of, well, what do I understand and what do I not? Working with a teacher has been very helpful for me, and many of you might work with teachers off and on or Dharma friends, noble friends. Because Zazen can be very peaceful, but as you know, after sitting for a half an hour, it's like a lot comes up that is not so peaceful. And it's not so, easy. So learning to work with that brings the benefit of seeing the empty nature of thought, but it takes practice. So a teacher points directly to our Buddha nature. Now, we all have Buddha nature. We all are Buddha nature. But it's very slippery. It's very hard to express. So, I found it very frustrating to work on koans, and that has shifted happily. It felt a little like going to the dentist. You know, you got to get your teeth cleaned, but it kind of, my ego hurt, actually. To have a koan to be working on, like mu, and having to go to the teacher, and the teacher says, so show me mu. And you're like, ah. I don't know. I found myself like reciting poems, you know, because I lacked that ability to really express myself. I didn't really understand who I was fundamentally. And so the things that come up along the way, mental irritation, what the Buddha called unwholesome mind states, like anger, resentment, jealousy, feeling superior, and the subtle things to like disconnection, apathy, paralysis, a lack of empathy, overwhelmed with emotion, turning to substance abuse. I mean, these are all ways that we encounter our suffering in unwholesome ways, unwholesome mind states. And sitting zazen, it began to make really clear to me my entire life history of self-criticism and comparing resentments, kind of malice, malicious humor. In a sense, I could see how my mind kept attacking myself to like make myself more perfect. And it's not helpful, right? But it's helpful to see it. And in seeing it, we're becoming conscious of what the mind is doing. And without being conscious of it, we can't really let it go. So allowing these things to become conscious, to see clearly, is powerful, but it can be kind of painful and slow. And sometimes it seems to get worse before it gets better. Our minds can seem to be very chaotic and overwhelmingly negative. There can also be a kind of rebellion I found in myself, that as these negative mind states become more obvious, I feel more and more helpless to stop them. That's actually okay, because in a sense, stopping them is just more like adding more control, but just sort of seeing it and kind of stepping aside, it's really important. And there's some questions I found that were helpful to addressing my mind. One of them was, who are you talking to? Right? Because we're like, bah, 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 bah. Who are we talking to? You know, it's all kind of looping back. Asking myself, what's underneath that? You know, feeling fury. What's underneath that? And what can I make space for? Can I make space for that? This is actually something that my teacher started saying to me, Shugen Roshi started saying, when I would come with something that was just like impossible. And he'd say, okay, can you make space for that? And I would say, yeah. Because it's hard, you know, it's hard. And to not turn to the negative ways of coping is hard. We need support. A Tibetan teacher named Tralig Kyabkan says, the spiritual journey is a journey of detachment, a process of learning how to let go of things. All of our problems, miseries, and unhappiness are caused by fixation, latching onto things, and not being able to let them go. Letting go of fixation is effectively a process of learning to be free. Because every time we let go of something, we become free of it. Whatever we fixate upon limits us, because fixation makes us dependent upon something other than ourselves or other than our empty nature. Each time we let go of something, we experience another level of freedom. And this is true. You can see its empty nature eventually. Its constructed nature, how it came into being, causes and conditions. And then what? The space between thoughts just grows. Ability to rest in your own nature grows. And even going beyond dualities such as, you know, good and bad, good and evil, it's really hard. Something seems quite evil. I could name a few right now that have been really hurting, you know, how can this? You know, how can starvation being be forced in Gaza right now on the Gazan people? How can that be? And more countries aren't stepping forward, that our country's not stepping forward. How can that be? You know? Yeah, it's an empty nature, and it requires action. And finding how to do that, finding a level of freedom beyond the duality of good and evil, means stepping forward. It means seeing its true nature, seeing the pointlessness of a duality. So while there is ease and peace within Zazen, you can also break a sweat by not reacting internally. Like when I sit with my heartache and I'm not reacting, it's difficult. It can be a struggle. In a way, the ego wants to be right. I want to be right. And so it's a strong force to reckon with. And certainly if I'm going to have a difficult conversation with members of my family or community, I have to really experience this myself, that I don't need to react, that I can hold space. And as we experience this, after a while, really see the empty nature of even our most agitated states. So Trailig Kyabkhan again said, many people have a notion of the spiritual state as something extremely rarefied and lofty because we left behind all our normal mental states and attained some pure state of consciousness. According to Buddhism, this is not true. Once ignorance has been purified, you know, our deluded minds, our self-clinging, all capacities and functionings of normal consciousness are in fact enhanced. None of the features of our functioning consciousness, i.e. thinking, need to be renounced. We simply have to train our minds to renounce the ignorance that is behind our deluded states of mind. So we really have to be able to see that. And the Eightfold Path, which I mentioned earlier, it's understood as having three groupings of practice within them. One is the moral discipline of right speech, right action, right livelihood. Then there's the concentration factors of right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. And then there's the wisdom factors of right thought and right intention. And it's not really linear so much as it's a dynamic situation where, you know, studying one aspect feeds back on another. So it is a whole path. A Theravada teacher, Bhikkhu Bodhi, said that the wisdom, which is right thought and right intention, needs to develop in order for us to really be liberated. Because the moral discipline and concentration, they're just not enough to uproot our own ways of suffering. The roots of that, which are called the defilements. And he pointed out three different levels of defilement. I mean, these Theravadins are really good at these like details. So there's the latent defilements, which are kind of tucked away in our minds. You know, they're not clear to us at all. There are the manifest defilements, which are coming into consciousness, becoming aware. I am angry. And then there's a transgression, which is coming into action. You know, if I throw something across the room, for example, that's an action. It has consequences. But these defilements, they're always kind of present in us until we're fully enlightened Buddha. So they are latent until they become manifest. Then we get to work with them. That's the good news. And this is karma unfolding. Because it's wisdom, it's the wisdom of seeing this that can eradicate the suffering. And when we remove ignorance through our insight and letting go, we're leaning into that wisdom. So how does it function? And I think it's a feedback loop. And practice is to investigate deeply. You know, really, who am I? Who is coming into being? And what's holding me back? I think those are important questions. Hojin Sensei, I listened to her talk last week when she talked about the body as the body, really leaning into the Satipatthana Sutra, and I thought that was a really, it's such a good teaching. To really be in your body, because you know, this is where compassion rises up. It's really an embodied experience. And the same way our anger will attract anger, our goodness will attract goodness. So it's kind of like catching ourselves, the heartache, the shutdown, you know, and just metabolizing that to respond in a way that we really want to, you know. So I was getting some inspiration from this social activist called, his name is Kazu Haga. He's a West Coaster. Some of you may have encountered him, social justice activist, doing a lot of work with what he calls fierce vulnerability, which is his way of understanding nonviolent action. It's fiercely vulnerable. And he wrote, this is from an interview. In an interdependent world, that's our world, there's no such thing as individual healing and individual liberation. As we heal our wounds, as we heal our own traumas, we need to be very mindful that the intention of us doing our own individual healing is so that we can have more capacity to be out in the world, working on the collective healing. Because ultimately, if there isn't collective healing, I will never be whole. I will never be healed. And he said, we need to be able to say out loud that we are afraid, that we are confused. This is actually a really important stepping stone to being able to face reality as it is. I'm getting choked up. We can figure out how to most skillfully move forward. Yeah, so, you know, I and everybody, we're not always getting it right, right? Much as we want to be perfect. So I'm not always going to get it right on this path of seeing my own delusions and practicing uprooting them. And so this is humbling. I mean, this, if you stick with this practice, it can be very humbling and very empowering. And so I encourage myself and all you not to fear getting it wrong, not to fear vulnerability, but to let go of getting it right and just do the right next thing. We don't know the effects of our actions. We can't. So we just do our best. So I'm going to close with this poem that I found from Tracy K. Smith, who was at one time of Brooklyn, I believe, and I really love her poetry. The will to see oneself as fragile. The will to see oneself as fragile, fallible, liable to fail. To consider a stranger and hear in the mind's ear one's true voice insisting, I must change. Ordinary people do this patient, urgent work. Alone and together, day upon day upon day. Like my mother once leading her ailing mother back through the maze of our suburban scrawl, past ache, past haze, past confusion and rage, toward a neat room where waited prayer, fear, forgiveness, grief, grace. Grace. This is a poem about kin and neighbors and nations adrift in error under siege. This is a ceasefire poem. Yeah, so again and again to really be the breath and meet the world's confusion and our own with grace. And love.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, or to make a donation, please visit our website, zcnyc.org.